Tom Hanks, Glenn Close, Gene Hackman, Sigourney Weaver, Melanie Griffith, and Michelle Pfeiffer were among those actors nominated this year for Academy Awards. They were all chosen for their parts by casting director Juliet Taylor. Her long list of movie credits includes the recent films Dangerous Liaisons, Working Girl, Mississippi Burning, Big, and other films such as The Killing Fields, Terms of Endearment, Taxi Driver, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and 16 Woody Allen movies. Her long association with Woody Allen began on his 1971 film Bananas. She was the assistant casting director on the film and had just started working in the business.
Right out of college, I went to work with a wonderful casting director named Marion Daugherty, who was really sort of the pioneer of casting directors, in the sense that she was the first person who really made it a sort of creative, selective process. And in the old days, it used to be more sort of cattle calls and, you know, grocery lists of actors, the sort of the old studio system. And I worked for her for a number of years, and she was offered a job producing films. And I sort of outstayed everybody. She left. Everybody else left, and I stayed, and I sort of inherited Woody Allen, really. It was, you know, a wonderful gift.
So at what point do you bring an actor or an actress to Woody Allen and say, I think this is the person?
Well, I mean, every time we start on a film, I mean, you know, now, after having done 16 films with him, we know a lot of the same people, and we sort of have a shorthand in a way. Usually what happens is when he's working on a script, which is over the summer, he'll call and before he's finished it, and we'll start talking about the characters that he's writing. And often we'll get sort of an angle, at least, on who our central characters will be by the time the first draft of the script is out, which is in August, usually. He has a, you know, very, very definite pattern of how he shoots films. And we'll settle a certain amount over the telephone or in person, you know, just sort of sitting around. But then, you know, when he does a film that has a larger cast, you know, like Radio Days or even New York Stories, I have to show him, you know, a lot of new people for smaller roles. And then one battle also that I'm always sort of waging is trying to get him to use new people in general.
Well, Woody Allen is a director who has an almost repertory company that
he works
which
I think is great, by the way. I mean, I think it's wonderful that he does. But I do think that it's sort of fun and kind of interesting for him to branch out a little bit. I always am sort of knocking on that door a little bit. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. You don't believe in the big casting call, the cattle call type of casting call. So you just call in a few select people to meet with you for a part. Usually.
Right. And I try to make them all different. I find that a good director is really comes in with not necessarily a lot of strong preconceptions about a role. They'll think they have some ideas about how a role can be played, but that they're really very open-minded when they get there, and they like to be surprised by different ways of playing a part. You know, casting, in addition to obviously solving the problems of who's going to play the roles, I find often is a very interesting process of getting to the heart of the character.
Mm-hmm. When someone comes into your office who you haven't worked with before, what kind of meeting do you have with them? What's the audition like?
Well, I usually sort of operate fairly intuitively. I mean, I have a sense, I think, in just sitting and talking to someone of how charismatic I feel they are, or everybody hits you on some level, right, who you meet, and some people just sort of make more of an impact than others. Then, of course, after you've met someone who you think is very interesting in some way or very magnetic in some way, you do hope they can follow it up with acting, right? Oftentimes they do, though. They have whatever that is, sort of all the corny expressions that people use, something special about them, something that makes them, you have the feeling they will fill up the screen in some way, just like they do fill up a room when you talk to them.
When you're auditioning somebody, do you, if you're serious about them, you'll have them read, do a reading?
Yes.
How do you decide what scene is best for them to read?
Well, you know, I mean, I think most scripts there are certain scenes that really sort of jump out as the most telling scenes. You sort of don't want to go for the most sort of emotional moment where someone flings someone across a room or something. I mean, you know what I mean? Because that all that does is give in to sort of out of context kind of emotion. I think that oftentimes character revealing quieter scenes work better. Sometimes if a script doesn't have something that's meaty enough in it, I'll pick something from another screenplay and read an actor in that.
Mm-hmm. Is a star ever too big to audition?
Well, they oftentimes that is the case, that they will refuse to read. But I find that if you're working on a film with a good director, and the material is really good, it's surprising how many people will read.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do it not necessarily to prove that they're good or they're not good. They'll do it to prove that they can play a particular character that is a departure from what they've done before.
Is there an example you can think of where that happened?
Yeah, well, Michelle Pfeiffer read for Dangerous Liaison.
Mm-hmm.
And she was already an actress of note.
But this was a different kind of role for her?
It was a different kind of role for her. She'd never done a period piece like that before.
Mm-hmm.
She was, a contemporary actress who didn't have strong stage training. And this was a very theatrical piece.
You cast Taxi Driver. And I assume that Martin Scorsese had already chosen Robert De Niro and Harvey Keitel for the leading role, since he'd worked with them on Mean Streets.
Right.
But I assume also that it was you who found Jodie Foster to play the role of the young prostitute.
Well, she was, known. Using her, obviously, in this part was kind of, groundbreaking, but she had already worked and was a pretty amazing child actress at the time.
I don't know if this is a relevant question or not, but did you have to think about whether Jodie Foster was mature enough to handle the role? It was a role with prostitution and violence, and it was a pretty complex role, and I think
I'll
not everybody could handle it.
I'll tell you, this was the biggest part of doing this film. Not whether we felt she could handle it, because she was always a pretty amazing girl, but she's a Californian, and they were not going to let her do it.
The state?
The state was not going to let her do it. And no matter what we did, we promised we'd have a social worker on the set all the time, that she would have this support system. And it was a battle to the end. As a matter of fact, the whole time we were working on the film, I was trying to find a replacement for Jodie Foster if we did not win the litigation.
Have you ever stopped someone on the street and say, "You've got a great face, want to be in a movie?"
Yep, I have.
Who'd you do that to?
Well, there were these two men, and they were, I would say, about 30 years old, and they were identical twins, and they were just totally goofy-looking identical twins, sort of chinless, and both had the exact same mustache and buck teeth, and they were so goony-looking that I just couldn't believe my eyes, and we were in the middle of casting Stardust Memories, which was, a pretty sort of surreal group of actors, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stopped them. It was very funny because they even talked kind of in unison. They finished each other's sentences too. And they had these little sort of chipmunk voices. They were very sweet guys, actually, and they were thrilled. They were in the movie and they had a ball.
Even though you're casting them as almost freaks, they were still thrilled?
Well, they weren't freaks. They were kind of adorable. They were more like wooded animals or something, I think they thought it was fun.
Uh-huh.
I think they thought it was fun.
One last question. I've heard from some directors that when they start a movie, the studio gives them a list of bankable stars, and they're given a list of, say, 12 people who they can cast in a certain role. Do you hear much about things like that? Have you ever been in the position of having to do that?
I think that's very true. I think that because I've had the good fortune to work with directors who have a certain amount of clout, that I've experienced less of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
They're let alone a little bit more.
Right.
But I'll tell you, I think it's getting worse. I think it is getting worse. It's been much worse the last couple of years than it had been before. And I think partly, the studios are not run by filmmakers really anymore. They're big companies, and they're run by people who don't know that much about filmmaking. And most of the studio executives seem scared to death half the time. There's a huge turnover. And I do think it's getting worse. It's upsetting. I'm grateful to be here in New York, where I don't have to face it every day.
Well, I thank you very much for telling us a little bit about what you do. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.